This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Education Diane Ravitch. She has some thoughts about education reform in Louisiana under the helm of Bobby Jindal and the court fights that have ensued over the last year, unsuccessful court decisions for the administration in light of sweeping legislation that was passed a year ago. Also on the show, the remarkable dancers, actress, choreographer Debbie Allen is back in town, back on her home turf, remembering her friend Derek Gordon, the man who headed the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge over the last several years. And we will talk with Debbie Allen about this week's production, paying tribute to Derek Gordon, and Molly Buckman from the Ballet Theater. All this, now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org works as well if you'd like to join the conversation with Diane Ravitch, a historian of education, an educational policy analyst and research professor at New York University, and formerly Assistant Secretary of Education of the United States of America. Good morning, Diane Ravitch.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
And Diane has been in this neck of the woods a few times, and she'll be back tomorrow as part of the Lunch with Leaders. And we thank you for giving us a preview of your remarks tomorrow. And you have discussed on this show about a year ago your thoughts about the governor's education reform initiatives. It's been a hit-and-miss kind of situation for the administration, success in the legislature in some cases, and defeats in the courts. Are you surprised?
Well, I guess the only thing that's surprising is that the two judges that have ruled important parts of the governor's agenda unconstitutional are, I gather, both Republicans. So this is not a partisan issue. What the governor wants to do is unconstitutional. He wants to take money away from public schools that the state constitution says is dedicated to public schools and give it to religious schools, private schools, or all sorts of commercial vendors. Those are not public schools. So that's clearly unconstitutional, and he deserves to lose on that. So he's going to have to come up with another funding source to do what he wants to do. The Act 1 being declared unconstitutional, that was on a procedural ground, but that's a terrible act as well. He's really seems to be set on an agenda to demolish public education in the state of Louisiana.
297-5633. As you can hear, Diane Ravitch is revved up. She is not a fan of the education reforms that have been advanced by Governor Jindal and his administration. Why not?
Well, it's because there's not a one of them that has any evidence behind it. There's a basic rule, and I say in any profession, which is the first thing is do no harm. I know that people, when they join the medical profession, take the Hippocratic Oath, and the essence of that is do no harm. The governor's enacting policies that have no evidence behind them, no research, no experience. He's demoralizing teachers. That can't be good for kids. He's shifting money out of public education and over to the private sector, and there's no evidence that that's going to be good for kids. Well, the end result is to damage, undermine, and weaken public education. And public education is one of the basic institutions of our democracy, so that's a scary prospect.
When you say the governor is demoralizing teachers, Diane, are you saying it from firsthand knowledge, or is this anecdotal evidence that you're presenting?
No, it's actually it's not just firsthand knowledge, it's evidence-based. I mean, we have evidence from major national surveys, like the MetLife Survey of the American Teachers, says that demoralization among teachers today is at its highest point in decades. So it's a national problem. It's aggravated in Louisiana because Louisiana has gone farthest along the path of criticizing teachers, saying that teachers are the problem, discouraging experienced teachers. And I know I read a couple of weeks ago that there's been a huge spike in the number of teachers retiring before they age out. So there is evidence that teachers are leaving. I know that just the other day, a 25-year veteran who said, described her experience as being very, very positive in every respect, said she's quitting teaching in Louisiana because the climate is so hostile to teachers.
You were appointed to positions in the federal administrations of both Presidents George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton, so you have been received well by a Republican president and a Democratic president. So are you speaking as one who has a particular philosophical slant on this from either the left or the right?
Well, I don't have a political slant. I served in the administration of the first President Bush, where I was in charge of research. And then President Clinton subsequently appointed me to the National Testing Board. It's called the National Assessment Governing Board, and I was 7 years on the National Testing Board. So I have a lot of knowledge of testing and what it's good for and what it's not good for. And I'm a historian. I'm not paid by anybody. I'm not on anyone's payroll. I work for a university part-time, but I spend most of my time, I'm in my 70s, so I don't want any grants, I don't want any money, I don't curry favor with anybody. What the agenda that I'm in favor of is good education for American children and also supporting public education, because I think that it's a fundamental part of our democracy, and if we privatize education, we will not see any more social movements to support the neediest children, the most vulnerable children, and if we go along with this the business model of education, we'll see schools pushing out the kids who have disabilities and pushing out the kids who don't speak English because they cost too much to educate, and that's the way business operates. Is you get rid of your losers, you close your bad chain stores and open other chain stores. But that's not the fundamental principle of American education. The fundamental principle of American education is equality of educational opportunity. And when you privatize education, the fundamental principle goes out the window.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, for Diane Ravitch, former Assistant U.S. Secretary of Education. Later we are going to hear from the remarkable Debbie Allen. But Diane Ravitch is a person who has traveled this country, born in Houston, educated at Wellesley, and her PhD from Columbia. And as noted, she served in high places in administrations of a Republican president, George H.W. Bush, and a Democratic president, William Jefferson Clinton. Originally, you were a supporter of No Child Left Behind, but you had a change of heart. What prompted this?
Well, you know, I spent many years in conservative think tanks, and as somebody who had worked in the first Bush administration, I was a supporter of testing and accountability, and then along came the second President Bush saying that testing and accountability was the way to go. It would close the achievement gap between black and white children. It would do all kinds of wonderful things. But as the evidence began to pile up about 5 years into No Child Left Behind, it became clear that it was not closing the achievement gap, and the testing and accountability, all this emphasis on the test, was distorting the very purpose of education, because there are so many children who are wonderful people who will grow up to be productive members of society who didn't get high test scores. And yet we are judging children and now teachers and schools and closing schools based on the test scores. And I just lost faith. I realized that the things that I had been supporting weren't working. And at some point, if you're a thoughtful person and you see that the things you believe in don't work, then you've got to change your beliefs. And that's what happened to me. I think that the terrible thing that's happened in this country is the test scores have become more important than human beings. And what's made this country great is that we do believe, at least we have for generations believed, that what matters most is innovation, creativity, wisdom, character. All those things are tossed aside because the test scores are the only thing that matter. And the tests just aren't that good. As I mentioned before, I spent 7 years on the National Testing Board, and I know that the tests have plenty of errors in them. Sometimes what they say is the right answer isn't right. Sometimes there are two right answers. Sometimes there's no right answer. And yet we're judging people's lives and putting a label on them based on these fallible tests.
Now, Governor Jindal's staff, not the governor himself, but his press office, issued this statement in light of the decision a few weeks ago from Judge Mike Caldwell, which struck down the school voucher program. This was the statement. He says, "We expect to prevail in the state Supreme Court. When we embarked on this path of reform, we knew this would not be an easy fight because the coalition of the status quo is entrenched and has worked to hold Louisiana teachers and students back for decades. Despite the fact that the people of Louisiana voted for reform, the coalition of the status quo is attempting to use every legal obstruction to block reforms that reward good teachers and give more choices to families. We know that the families and teachers of our state deserve better. On behalf of the people of Louisiana that voted for reform, the good teachers who are working hard every day but are being held back by the status quo, and the parents and kids who deserve a choice, we will continue fighting, and we are confident that we will prevail. Are you part of the coalition of the status quo, Diane Ravitch?
Absolutely not. I think that we should improve our public schools. We should improve them every day. But the vouchers are not a reform. Vouchers are a radical idea. The only country that's gone full-fledged for vouchers is Chile, and not the high-performing nations of the world. You won't find vouchers in Japan or Korea or Singapore or Finland. None of those high-performing countries have vouchers. The one place where we have seen now a long-term experiment with vouchers is Milwaukee. Milwaukee's had vouchers for 22 years. It has a vigorous voucher sector. It has a charter sector, and it has a shrinking public school sector. All three of them are doing the same. The vouchers do not, kids do not outperform the kids in either of the other sectors. They all about do the same, and they all do terribly. Milwaukee is one of the lowest performing districts in the nation with 22 years of vouchers and charters. So this is all a lot of baloney and hooey, and calling people defenders of the status quo is just another way of the governor's staff saying, we don't like public education. Well, why didn't they take it to the voters? I didn't see a vote on vouchers. In fact, I'll tell you, and this is simply a matter of fact, no vote has ever been taken in this country in support of vouchers. The last time it was on a state ballot was in Florida in November of 2012, and the voters in Florida overwhelmingly rejected vouchers. They have no vote has ever passed vouchers in any state in this country, not in Louisiana either. They voted for Jindal, but Jindal didn't go around saying, I'm going to implement vouchers. That wasn't part of his platform.
It wasn't a big surprise, though.
Well, you know, I don't know. I know that a lot of money went into his campaign, and I don't know what the state of the other party is. But I can tell you that calling vouchers a reform is a bad joke on the people of Louisiana, because vouchers have not succeeded in improving schools anywhere.
297-5633 is your number, and we will go to the phone lines and take a few inquiries for Diane Ravitch if you'd like to get it. Former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Education. Diane will be featured tomorrow at Drusilla Seafood at noon with leaders with the league. Gene Armstrong also reports that Chaz Romer, Bessie board member and now the president of the Bessie board, will be there, and Chaz may have some ideas that are at odds with those expressed by Diane. And Chaz, of course, was reelected last year and did not debate his opponent, but he may very well be in a bit of a debate with Diane Ravitch. Now, you have been criticized through the years, Diane, by both the left and the right. I was alluding to that earlier. There are some who are probably hearing your words and thinking that you are entrenched on the left. I don't think that's the case.
No, of course it's not the case. I'm independent, and a lot of people have a hard time with the idea that you can be independent. I don't think I can easily be pigeonholed. As you mentioned, I work for the first President Bush. I also worked in three very conservative think tanks, and I was in the most elite of the conservative think tanks, which was at the Hoover Institution, and worked for 10 years alongside some of the leading lights of the conservative movement. So I know all the conservative arguments. I also know the arguments of the left. I'm trying to say what's best for children. What's best for children is to have experienced teachers, to have a good public school in every neighborhood. And if we're concerned about the achievement gap, and if we're concerned about improving how kids do in school, then you have to pay attention to the lives of children and their families. You have to make sure that when children come to school, you've got to remember the achievement gap begins before the first day of school. So you have to make sure that children come to school healthy, that they have had pre-kindergarten, and I know that that's something that John White has supported, thankfully. But they also have to have teachers who feel secure in their jobs and don't feel that they're going to lose their jobs because of these stupid test scores. The test scores are valuable when they're used appropriately.
We'll be back with Diane Ravitch after this 90-second pause, and also Debbie Allen is next on WRKI. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Debbie Allen has arrived. She will be with us in just a moment. And Diane Ravitch is with us for a few more moments, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Education. Dominic in Grand Coteau. Dominic, you're on the air with Diane.
Good morning. Good morning, Diane. One of the things that I think that is missing in all these discussions about the schools is the home life. And I lived in Greenville, Mississippi for a while, and let me tell you, it is sad. It is sad that these children even get up to go to school in the morning. And the irony of the voucher program, which is geared with a business model, is, for me, that it's the pursuit of money that has, this the students and the kids and the families in this situation in the first place. It forgets the family in the process of trying to get things done. And
all right. Would you respond, Diane?
Yes, I'm very glad you made that point, because there is just a huge amount of research that says that the most important factor in how children do in school is their family, and the most important part of the of that is family income. So when you look at test scores, the top half of the distribution is always overpopulated by kids from stable, affluent homes, and the bottom half is overpopulated by kids who live in poverty. And the biggest scandal in the United States is that almost 25% of our kids live in poverty. I'd be willing to bet that in Louisiana it's even more than that. So instead of addressing the root causes of low academic performance, which is poverty and families that are having a struggle just to survive, teachers are being blamed and schools are being closed, and money's going to be transferred over to worse schools because they're religious and private, and that's called reform, and that's ridiculous.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, please be brief. You're on with Diane Ravitch.
Good morning, Jim. It's kind of hard to be. There's so much going on in the subject, and thanks for bringing it up. I would concur. I mean, some of the children that go to our schools, their food, they rely on a meal, a breakfast and lunch, to come from the school. I think that it's a lot easier to support family values if you make enough to support a family.
Diane?
Well, again, family income, if you want to predict what kids' test scores are, you can't do it exactly, but the best predictor is family income. And if you, whether you look at the SAT or the ACT or the state test scores or the national test scores, or for that matter, the test scores in any other country in the world, the best single predictor of test scores is family income.
Karen calling from Houston, Texas, the birthplace of both of our guests today. Karen, you're on with
Diane. I'm calling as Diane Ravitch is. You know, we have legislators who are telling us, oh, well, we ought to copy what's going on in Louisiana. We ought to have vouchers. Or we ought to go look at Florida. Jeb Bush is trying to say Florida's the miracle. We've seen problems with the Texas miracle and are trying to get rid of high-stakes tests. And I just wanted to ask Diane to comment about Texas looking to Louisiana and Florida.
All right. Diane?
Well, I'd say that anyone who wants a miracle should go to church, because you don't find miracles in schools. And it may be once in a while you'll see a child who just suddenly blossoms, and that seems like a miracle. But when a whole school or a district or a state claims that it's found a miracle solution, don't believe it. It's simply not true. I mean, in 2000 and 2001, we, as you said, we heard about the Texas miracle, and now the whole country is stuck with No Child Left Behind, which is no miracle at all. We now know there was no Texas miracle. So now we have another Bush, Jeb Bush, who's saying there's a Florida miracle, and there's no miracle in Florida either. Florida is not leading the pack, and I just posted on my blog this morning a list of 226 charter schools that have been closed in Florida. So no miracle there.
Veronica in North Baton Rouge. Hi, Veronica. You're on WRKF with Diane Ravitch.
Hi. To stick to the trend of comparisons, I see that the state of Arkansas ranks in the top five in the nation as far as performance in public schools. And there's not much difference between Louisiana and Arkansas as far as demographics and socioeconomic states. I'm not sure if they're doing voucher programs, but and it doesn't seem like a miracle. I think it's something they've attained over time. But have we looked at Arkansas? Thanks.
Well, I think if you wanted to look at successful, if you want to look at successful states, you would be looking at Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Jersey. Those are the three highest performing states in the U.S. But I think that the most important thing we ought to be doing is looking at children. And all of this race idea, this idea that we're all in a big competition, we all have to be number one, this is ridiculous. We don't lead our lives that way. We should be leading our life figuring out how to make our children better citizens, how to help them grow up to be good human beings. And that's not a race. That's a responsibility.
Well, we thank you for joining us today, Diane Ravitch. And as mentioned, Diane will be at Drusilla Seafood tomorrow at noon with Leaders with the League. And we look forward to talking with you again sometime very soon. Thank you, Diane.
Well, thank you. There's also an open teacher town hall meeting that follows at 5 o'clock at BREC, somewhere in Baton Rouge.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And we're joined in studio by the remarkable legend Debbie Allen, who's heard this song a few times. A few times when you've been on this show.
Oh, that song. I love that song. It belongs to me. I love it. Thank you for playing it, Jim.
Well, this is always a delight, a highlight of the year to visit with you, but somewhat bittersweet because in the past you've been accompanied by our friend Derek Gordon, and Derek is gone.
Yeah, this is the first time we've had this interview without Derek, and it, you know, it's pulling at my heartstrings just walking in the building. But it also gives me a bit of joy and light to know that we are carrying on the programs that he set forth here in Baton Rouge, and it's right in line with this wonderful conversation you've been having all morning with Diane, the former Associate Secretary of Education, and you know, what is needed in the public schools, the arts education that we're bringing through the Debbie Allen Dance Residencies. It's just been a joy. And watching the children grow over the years, it's been over 6 years. And some of the students coming out of our programs are in college, and I've written many, many recommendation letters, and I'm in touch with so many of them, and they're doing so well. So it's a matter of pride to still be here and have this show starting all over again on Thursday night.
297-5633 if you'd like to join us. Debbie Allen is here in studio, and we're talking about her life and career and remembering Derek Gordon. It's the 6th annual Debbie Allen Dance Residency. Derek's song, Here's to Life, performances tomorrow night, Thursday at 7, Friday at 7 p.m., Saturday two shows, 3 p.m. and 7, and Sunday two shows at 3 and 7 p.m., at the Magnolia Performing Arts Pavilion at the Baton Rouge Community College. And Derek Gordon was a person who was a fantastic man, in addition to bringing people like you to Baton Rouge over and over. And as we know, he held big positions with the Kennedy Center and with Lincoln Center for Jazz.
Jazz at Lincoln Center.
When did you meet him?
I met Derek, oh my God, how many years ago? It feels like it's 20 years. It may not be 20 years, but it's close. I met him at the home of Peggy Cooper K. Fritz over emptying a dish of chicken casserole. We were digging out the last remains, and there we were eating in the kitchen, trying to just get a little bit more to eat. And we said hello. And he said, Debbie Allen, and said, hello. And he said, you need to come to the Kennedy Center and do something with me. I said, really? And that prompted the conversation that turned into the first production at the Kennedy Center, where I became artist in residence for over 15 years. So
you're now on the board there, aren't you?
Oh, no, I'm not on the board. Just an artist that comes in with a big bang, and it's wonderful, the work we did there. You know, I remember us having auditions in a snowstorm and 700 kids showing up to be in one of our shows, and the shows being sold out the moment they were announced. You just couldn't buy a ticket. You couldn't get a ticket. And here we are in Baton Rouge recreating that whole concept, using the young people of your own community and nearby communities who are talented, and doing a residency where we teach them actually new styles of dance or push their level of ability on the stage and do a performance. So this show, Thursday night, that we're doing, Derek's song, Here's to Life, is a tribute to Derek Gordon, with reprising some of the wonderful things we've done in the past, but also we opened up his songbook. Oh, my God, Jim, that was like going through a computer. It took weeks to go through all the music that he loved, and it was just a real challenge to pick and choose, but we did. I did, and that's what we're doing on this week, and we hope that everybody will come and see these wonderful young people. And the performers are from the ages of 5 years old to 25, which is really so great.
That's fantastic. And Derek, at the time he met Debbie, was senior vice president at the Kennedy Center, and then he would become chief executive officer for jazz at Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
And you met him many years ago and stayed close all that time. In the last 6 or 7 years of his life, he was in his hometown. He came home and died young. Derek Gordon leaves quite a legacy, and he will be remembered, as he should be, by his great friend Debbie Allen and a number of fabulous dancers from 5 to 25, trained by Debbie, this week, starting tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at Magnolia Performing Arts Pavilion. Judy, on Highway 44, you're on the air with Debbie Allen. Hi, Judy.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say, Ms. Allen, I am an immense admirer of your work over the years, to the point that I've told my children, my daughters, I said, when you grow up, you need to be as feisty as that woman. Mm-hmm. And I told my son, you need to marry a woman like that.
That is quite a compliment. Thank you so much for that.
Well, and you have quite a family. Everyone in the family, including your husband, your children, they're all exceptionally talented people, no surprise, but I know you're quite proud of them.
Yeah, I am. We just my son just graduated from LARS, the Los Angeles School of Recording, and we were so excited about that. And my daughter Vivian is getting ready to play in a production of Joe Turner's Come and Gone in Los Angeles, directed by her aunt Felicia Rashad.
That's fantastic. When does that begin?
That's gonna open in May 8th. Downtown at the Center Theater Group in Los Angeles. It's going to be quite a big production. And my niece, Felicia's daughter, Felia Condola, she's actually starring in a play on Broadway right now with Cecily Tyson and Vanessa Williams. And it's not opened yet, but you know, our children are going into the world, and that's all you want, is for your children to be good people, to have a good quality education, what you've been talking about all morning, and to find their purpose in life and do what they can do to create some joy in this world and guide a family the way we have tried to do.
When did you start dancing?
I can't remember not dancing, Jim. I think I was dancing when I came out. I was dancing at 4 years old, 3 years old. I remember dancing around the house and being the entertainment for the family at birthday parties and you know, just born with that instinct, with that that heart of a dancer.
And you're forever young when you dance, right?
I don't know if you're forever young, but you will. It keeps you. You keep that gypsy spirit about you. Uh-huh. The gypsies, you know, they move in different places and find the energy and the life. And in the dancer's world, we continue to move and we go everywhere we go. I'm going to Australia in September with a big show.
In Australia.
Yep.
So it goes on and on and on for Debbie Allen. Do you ever get tired? Do you ever say, I've had enough? Or does it stimulate you every day to know what's next?
You know, it stimulates me, Jim, because I'm doing so many interesting things. Primarily my work with young people here and the Debbie Allen Dance Academy and other places where I go and do lectures and give a class or something. And then my professional career directing and starring in things like Grey's Anatomy, directing Grey's Anatomy. My character just bought the hospital. I don't know if you watched that, but oh wow, that's a wonderful show to work on.
So you do a number of different things and a pace that is quite dramatic. How do you keep this pace?
Well, you know, that pace was developed when I was a young girl in public schools. I'm a product of public school education. And in public schools, in elementary school, we had you know, all the basic courses, but we had music and art appreciation, and we had our performances, and I was voted most versatile in high school, and
that
has stayed kind of with me, which is a good thing.
You'll always be synonymous with Lydia Grant.
But. I know. That's my girl. That's the to the world. It's. I was in the post office yesterday. Let me give a shout out to Catherine at the FedEx over there on Florida. I went into the post office, and when this young woman who was helping me realized who I was, it just turned the whole office upside down. And it was all about fame. It was all about fame. And they're going to come and see the show this weekend.
297-5633 for Debbie Allen. She was appointed by George W. Bush as a member of the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities, and she has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame and has been nominated and has received many awards, three-time Emmy Award winner, three times, and of course had been nominated for Tony Awards, has been, And also Golden Globe.
Yeah.
So you have covered the gamut, and it is a lifetime of achievement with many years to go. And Debbie is gracing our fair city tomorrow night. Her dancers from the Debbie Allen Dance Academy will be on stage at 7 p.m. at the Magnolia Arts Pavilion at BRCC. And if you'd like more information, 344-0334. That's 225-344-0334. Now, for those who have not heard you on this show before, you spent much of your youth not so far away from where we are right now, Port Allen.
Yes. In fact, I'm going to take a trip over there today and go get my fig preserves and see my cousin Ida May. Every summer, we were shipped off to Port Allen, Baton Rouge, to, you know, feed chickens and slop jars and do all those wonderful chores, but to grow up with that kind of cultural understanding and family tradition was a really important part of growing up in the South.
Your sister, I guess, was there with you.
Yeah, Felicia Rashad was right there with me. I can remember us. I can see us now running through that pasture, trying to run from that bull and get over that fence in time. We always made it, though. We always made it. Those are great, great days with my Aunt Fanny, my Uncle Ferdy. And I think one thing that I will do when I slow down a little bit, I don't know when that's going to happen, but write a couple of books about those wonderful experiences that I grew up with.
In Port Allen, and born in Houston?
Born in Houston, right where Miss Diane was born. And, you know, the Space Center has always been a big part of our pride and joy.
We'll talk more with Debbie Allen, and we will hear from some of you. If you'd like to join us, there is still time. 297-5633 is your number. Debbie and her dancers featured tomorrow night at the Baton Rouge Community College Magnolia Performing Arts Pavilion. Back after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Debbie Allen, dancer, choreographer, actress, still going strong with Grey's Anatomy. And, of course, she has danced like few have, starting back in the 80s with Fame and before that. Broadway, that's a question from a listener online, Ariana. She wants to know about your experience on Broadway. That had to be an exhilarating time for you.
Oh, Broadway, there's nothing like it. My first show was Raisin, an adaptation of Lorraine Hansberry's Raisin and Son. But I think my most exciting performance for me personally was Anita in West Side Story with the real original team, with Bernstein, Sondheim, Jerome Robbins, Arthur Lawrence. All of the original authors were there for that definitive revival. That was an amazing experience for me. And then, of course, I worked with the legendary Bob Fosse playing his definitive revival of Sweet Charity, where I played Sweet Charity.
I think you were on the show first time, first of many times, and we were talking about Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Yes. Cat on a Hot Tin Roof was my directorial Broadway debut. And then also my debut in the West End in London, And we came home with the Olivier Award, the most coveted theater award you can win in London and in England. And so I'm still at it. The piece I'm working on now, Freeze Frame, is a very edgy piece that addresses gun violence and the challenges young people in the inner city have with religion, education, love, gangs, all of these things. And we're hoping to really make this play, we're hoping this play has legs and wings. It's very topical and very timely for us to be doing it.
It'd be nice to see it here at some point. Seth on Sherwood. Seth, good morning. You're on the air with Debbie Allen.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm great, Seth. How are you?
I'm good. Debbie, I want to say thank you for this reason. And it's keeping in line with the last segment with education. Mm-hmm. I want to say thank you for this reason. HBCUs were dying in the 80s and 90s. You came along, Spike Lee came along with School Days, and it became cool again to go to HBCU. And then Different World, which no one liked in the first season, you took over. And although I went to a school that was white, I wanted to go to a black school so bad. And the Rover went up. So, from looking at A Different World, it was cool. And enrollment went up so much in a lot of black schools.
Yeah, we tripled the enrollment of historically black colleges. We also increased the enrollment in regular colleges that were not African-American or black. Young people got an identity of what college could be like and aspire to those wonderful, colorful, and very different characters. You know, Whitley was very rich. Dwayne Wayne, who was more from a blue-collar family, and how they came together. And I just really took that task that Mr. Cosby gave me and went to work. And I'm so happy that you're applauding that effort. I'm trying to get the rights to do it as a revival right now. I'm trying.
In a few moments, we'll hear from Molly Bookman, who, of course, is on the cutting edge of dance in this community and has been for many years. But Debbie Allen is here, and her crew of dancers will be on stage this week for six shows, one Thursday, one Friday, two Saturday, and two Sunday, 7 p.m. Thursday and Friday, 3 and 7 on Saturday and Sunday, and once again at the Magnolia Performing Arts Pavilion at BRCC. 344-0334 is the number. What do you remember most about Derek?
Oh, Derek. Oh, I remember his joy for music. I remember Derek going to church maybe three times on Sunday. Three or four times. I'm like, child, why are you going again? No, Debbie, I have got to go because we're singing for this or we're singing for that. His love of music and his strong faith really defined him as a human being. And the work that he did for the world, that informed his personality and his work. I just remember his laughter and his smile and the closeness. That's what I remember.
For a man who accomplished as much as he did in such a short life, he was a man of great humility.
Of great humility, and he never, rested on his laurels. He was always trying to do something more and more and more. And he had this incredible phone book that he just would open up. He just opened up that phone book and he could get anybody on the phone, and everybody would come, and everybody will come. So we're doing this in his honor this week. There'll be another celebration in the fall, and then there'll be another celebration when I come back next year this time. And we'll keep this
we'll keep it going.
This light lit in this path, this footprint growing ever wider and deeper for young people and for the arts community. And I want to say thank you to all the people who have been so supportive, you know, the Arts Council, Paula Pennington, Cleo Fields Leadership Institute. There's so many wonderful people that have, our mayor, that have gone the distance to support Derek's efforts and the need to fill that void for young people. And I have such deep respect. I will always come back.
Well, Derek was Arts Council CEO for 6 years. and he died September 10th of last year. So he's been gone 6 months and 3 days now. And anybody who met him remembers Derek Gordon. He was a man of immense charm and a perpetual smile. And through in the end, it was apparent that he wasn't feeling well, but he was always very gracious and kind.
Very gracious and kind.
And it's Derek's song, Here's to Life, the 6th Annual Debbie Allen Dance Residency here in Baton Rouge. What's one of the songs you found that Derek particularly liked that will be featured in this production?
Well, he loved Adele.
He did?
So Hometown Glory is up in there. Yeah, he liked Adele, and he liked the opera. So we're going to do Aida. We're going to do... Mm-hmm. A version, a very short version of Aida, and we're going to do Adele's Hometown Glory and some Sondheim music from Broadway. It's a very eclectic night.
Well, that's appropriate for him, and many great artists, including you, they came this way to perform because Derek picked up the phone and called them, and he had the associations with people like you, if there is anybody like Debbie Allen, but
yes.
But he had people who ordinarily wouldn't be coming to Baton Rouge who came here to perform and did so with everything they had because of Derek Gordon.
Because of Derek Gordon. And we're going to keep his name and memory alive. We're going to always speak his name out loud, and we're going to always honor him in the work that we do forever.
Well, thank you for joining us, Debbie Allen. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, Jim, it's so good to see you, and I will come again, and
well,
thanks for
do.
Inviting me.
Hopefully
thank
we'll
you.
Have you back in the fall when you return. And,
okay.
Congratulations on Vivian's ascension to
yes.
fame in Los Angeles.
Miss Vivian, she belongs to the Baton Rouge community, too. She had such a good time playing Sunday in Brothers of the Night, and that's the only reason she's not here now. She's busy working on a play.
Well, thank you, Debbie Allen.
Thank you, Jim.
We're joined now by Molly Bookman. She is the person who heads the Baton Rouge Ballet Theater and has done this for how many years now?
Oh, 30-something.
30-something.
But I am one of the artistic directors. The other is Sharon Matthews, and we've done it together.
For how many years?
I think 36.
Really? She's been with you every step of the way?
Absolutely. We were in graduate school together. So.
Well, she is a major part of what goes on as well.
And, absolutely.
But Molly is the voice we hear most often on this show, and we don't want to snub Sharon in any way.
Absolutely not.
And you're involved in some major endeavors in the next few days, and we will talk about those. But last time you were on this show, you had stepped down at LSU?
That's correct.
So you're no longer teaching at the old war school?
I am not, but I love LSU, and I love the dance program there. And they are actively searching for a new head of the dance program, and I am serving on that committee. I'm happy to help and volunteer in any way that I can.
Well, dance is an important part of the fabric of a vibrant city. Do we do a good job of keeping that alive in this community?
We do a good job of keeping dance alive. Do we do a good job of promoting that dance? Well, sometimes I wish there were more. I certainly wish there was more attention by the media to all the arts. As I've said before, you know, we may not be first in the media's mind, but in a great civilization, the arts are one of the things that are most lasting and most mm-hmm. remembered and most treasured. So we'd love to see the community give dance and all the arts more support, because they are something that make our lives, that brighten our lives and well, help us get in touch with humanity.
How has the economy affected the arts in the last several years?
It has definitely affected ticket sales and, more importantly, donors. These arts organizations cannot survive without donations, without corporate donations and individual mm-hmm. memberships. And whereas our ticket sales are still doing pretty well, quite well, we can't survive with just ticket sales. You know, we have this huge Nutcracker, and we are best known for our Nutcracker. And it seems like it must be rolling in the money. But it costs so much to produce ballet on a grand scale. There's so many man hours that go into it. So much money goes. People would be very surprised if they even knew what we pay to the River Center staff.
What do you pay?
I can't tell you off the top of my head, but for Nutcracker, it's, you know, well into the tens of thousands, 50,000, 60,000
It's a significant expenditure.
It's a huge expenditure, and that's not counting the symphony, which is $45,000, $46,000. So it's not profit that we're seeing from all those ticket sales. Arts organizations, to survive as something that is trying to create art rather than just entertainment, which is completely mm-hmm. driven by the ticket-selling public, need the support of a community. And that's what we're hoping for.
So when the symphony is performing, it costs about
$45,000
to make that happen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's significant.
That's a significant chunk. But we're very lucky that we do get so much support from the community. We've had great support this year from a number of groups, including Pennington, the Louisiana Division of the Arts. We do get mm-hmm. support, but we really thrive on our membership, those individual donors who are willing to say, just as they are for WRKF, that this is important to us and we're willing to give a little. If a lot of people give a little, we can have a thriving arts community.
Well, if it's March, there must be something on the calendar for Molly Bookman and the Ballet Theater and Sharon Matthews.
Absolutely.
And, it starts tomorrow night, spring concert. What will happen at the River Center?
This is a really exciting time. This is one of our biggest spring concerts in memory, in recent years at least. We have, we're doing the third act of Sleeping Beauty, which is the Aurora's wedding section, which is Princess Aurora, newly awakened, and Prince Desiree and their wedding, and the fairy tale characters that they naturally invite to their wedding, like Little Red Riding Hood and the Wolf, and others. So it's a spectacular sort of extravaganza, and it's an explosion of tutus and beautiful and pink point shoes and beautiful dancing. We have new guest artists who've never been to Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. They are natives of Japan and have scored in the top three in a number of international competitions. So we're very excited about them.
Coming all the way from Japan.
Well, they're coming from Florida. They are. They do reside in the U.S. now, but they're young and they're beautiful, and this is their first visit to Baton Rouge. And in addition to their Sleeping Beauty Grand Pas de Deux, they'll be performing a pas de deux in our first half of the program from The Flames of Paris, which was one of those Soviet ballets, one of those revolutionary ballets that we hear about but never see.
Well, the Soviet ballet has been in the news of late.
Oh, it certainly has. Isn't that amazing?
What's going on over there?
Well, you know, it's high intrigue, but you have it at every level. I don't think anyone's ever taken out a hit contract on Sharon or me.
Let's hope not.
Right. But people are always unhappy when they're not cast as they would like to be.
Is that what that's about?
That's what that's about. At least that was what I heard on WRKF in the news, that the gentleman who is accused of it was unhappy because his girlfriend was not cast. But that's maybe rumor. I don't know. I heard on the news.
Well, speaking of casting, this Sunday, youth ballet auditions for A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Our youth ballet summer tour is directed by Susan Perlis, and it is a fabulous opportunity for young dancers to really learn the skills of performing and touring. And they do this while also providing an incredible service. They do about 30 performances all over the city at nursing homes, at libraries, at community centers, and they bring a miniature version, in this case of Midsummer Night's Dream to audiences all over the city, and they are always book solid. People want them back. It is a high point of the summer. So it serves two great purposes.
And then a week from Saturday, March 23rd, Dancing in the Streets.
Dancing in the Streets is our big fun event at Perkins Row. They close down the street. We have a big tent. We have the band Fat Hat. We have food donated by all of the vendors at Perkins Row, as well as others across the city. We dance. We give some of the big awards that the ballet gives during the year. We have an amazing raffle, and it is a chance to support the ballet and have fun at the same time. There's lots of dancing, lots of fun. It's only $25 if you buy the tickets in advance. That's for food, drink, dancing, band, and a chance to boogie with the ballet.
For more information about any of these events, including Dancing in the Streets, it's 766-8379. That's 225 866-8379. It all starts tomorrow night, 7:30 at the River Center for the Performing Arts. It's the featuring Act 3 of the Sleeping Beauty and New Modern Works from the Baton Rouge Ballet Theater, the spring concert. So, good luck, Molly. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Take care. And thank you for joining us today. Until tomorrow, for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.